So it's April 10, 2019, and he loved. And we're going to look at Krishna's six opulences.
Yes.
And we're going to then look at them. First, we're going to look at them as far as Krishna, and then we're going to look at them in relationship to ourselves, to understand something about our own nature. Because I think when I was, I think some of you met Rukmini, who was here. She was working with me on a book. Yes? Yes, I think, did she even give a class when I was here?
She did.
I think she gave a class, yes. So she and I are working on a book on spiritualizing your career. Yeah. And part of it is finding out what is your nature so you can use your nature for your career. And one of the ways that we try to understand our nature is by which of the six opulences you find attractive. So we're going to be looking at that a little bit also. And first we might say, well, why do we want to know about the qualities of Krishna? And of course, there's many qualities listed of Krishna. There's 64 qualities. Here we're looking at the six opulences in terms of his qualities. Why do we care about knowing about the qualities of Krishna? And of course, Krishna himself answers this question in the Gita, where he says, Janma karma that if you understand how he's divine, that understanding alone liberates you from birth and death in this world and takes you to the supreme eternal atmosphere. And you might say, well, why would it do that? You know, why would understanding the opulences of Krishna, of the Supreme, why would that just jettison you, you know, to the spiritual kingdom? And this comes back to our basic understanding of what is our mentality as conditioned souls. Our mentality as conditioned souls is that we want to have ourselves as the center. And we really want to kind of put God out of the picture or keep him there kind of like a pet. You know, that you, okay, well, yes, I worship God and he's the one who supplies me. You know, when I need something, I go to my big daddy in the sky and say, hey, you know, this is what I need. Hurry up, hurry up. Right? Our big Amazon, right? Our kind of our cosmic Amazon. Except you don't even have to use a credit card. You just flatter. You know, imagine if you called up Amazon and just said, you guys are so great. You're wonderful. Send me a sofa. So that's often how people use God, you know. Glory, glory, glory to you. Please cure my cancer. Thank you very much. So the general mood, though, is among most of us in this world, is to kind of push God out of the picture, because that way we can do what we want to do. Kind of like teenagers who wait till their parents are out of the house to play video games. Or if they play video games when the parents are in the house, they close the door, they put on headphones, so they can pretend my parents aren't in the house. Right? So that's our general mood. And we become enamored and we talk about, oh, we're going to have another cure time now.
Yeah.
All right, Krishna Madhagya Madhava Prabhu. We just had a cure time without instruments due to your absence.
He likes to make a bad entrance.
What to do? I was following the schedule to end the kirtan at 5. So after my talk, we'll have. Is that all right with everybody?
Yeah.
We'll have another kirtan?
Yeah.
Yes. So we become absorbed in the qualities of things in this world, which are all ultimately Krishna's energy, but we become absorbed in them separate from Krishna. We become absorbed in the qualities of the fruit and the flowers and the mountains and the sky and the stars and ourselves and our friends and so forth. But it would be like becoming absorbed in the qualities of the home and forgetting about the owner of the home. You know, we've lost sight of the owner. We've lost sight of God. So we tend to naturally become absorbed. Oh, look at that. Very nice. We tend naturally to become absorbed in the name, the form, the qualities, and the activities of anyone that we care about. Isn't that a fact, right? Whether it's ourself, or it's some sports star, or movie star, or politician. And we can care about them negatively, too. So, like, if you hate Donald Trump, you might talk endlessly about his qualities and activities. Or his form, even, right? You have so many people that talk endlessly about how much he weighs and how he combs his hair. Isn't it? Right? So absorption can be either you love someone or you hate someone. But then we tend to discuss this about people. So the whole essence of spirituality is that we come to love God as a person rather than loving his energy separately from him. Instead of using his energy separately from him as more or less a thief, you know, maybe an out-and-out thief, I'm just going to take the things in the world and use them as I want, or, thank you, God, great, here, I'm going to take them and use them as I want, to going to actually loving God. And loving God means that we want to speak endlessly of his name and his form and his qualities and his activities. So if we're at the point where I think, okay, I want to be a spiritual person. I want to, again, have my loving relationship with God. I don't want to just be absorbed in his energy separately from him. So then we do something called sadhana bhakti or abhyas yoga, where we practice doing that. We practice talking about Krishna as if we already loved him. We basically, in one sense, imitate the activities of those who are already pure souls. Hare Krishna. And because we are ultimately a soul, we're really not a materially contaminated being. We actually are a pure soul. You know, so one thing you could get is there's a rug in the room where I'm staying. Do you know the key code for that room?
I'll check. Well, okay. I'll ask someone.
There's a rug underneath the bed in there that you could put in here, so you could put here on the floor and people can sit on that. So as we start to basically imitate the activities of those who already love Krishna, then the dormant love for Krishna in our heart becomes awakened. So that's the idea. And when that love becomes awakened, which is the only way you really know these things in truth, when we say know Krishna's qualities in truth, we don't mean just on a theoretical, intellectual, philosophical basis. But when we actually have some knowledge of Krishna. And even a little bit, like my spiritual master, oh, you made it! Thank you, thank you, thank you for coming. I felt so bad I was here such a short time that I couldn't come by to your place. So thank you so much for coming. So my spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he said that if even to a minute degree, even to a minute degree, if we can take up the mood of the souls who are already enlightened, already liberated, then we also enter into that realm. All right, so how do we understand God's qualities? Well, we could just kind of look around at nature, and we could see, okay, well, whoever's made everything. Oh!
Sorry to be late.
What a pleasure.
What a pleasure.
I didn't expect so many people to come.
We miss you.
I'm just so happy seeing everyone. So many people I don't even know. Oh my goodness, you've come.
They dragged me over from Honolulu.
Oh, I see. I dragged you, huh?
You have to interrupt everything. I have to give you a hug.
All right, we will interrupt everything to give you a hug. Oh, look at that. That's love.
No, that's balance disorder.
Okay, we've got to give Jagadatri a chair.
She can also sit here.
You can sit here.
Why don't you sit here?
Yeah,
that's good. Why don't you sit here, okay? On our old lady seats over here. Hare Krishna. I was just speaking to a group of young people the other day, and I had to remind them that old people are not a different species.
Yeah, really. I know.
I remember thinking that way.
I know.
Yeah, when I was talking about 20s. So anyway, we could understand something about the qualities of God just by looking around at the world and say, okay, you know, whoever's made this place and you want another pillow? Here you go. It must be very intelligent, must like a lot of beauty, right? Must like a lot of variety. Incredible variety. On each plant, every leaf is different. And two plants of the same species, you know, every leaf, every flower, even on the same plant. There's some flowers there, but those are a little different, even if they come from the same plant. So we can understand some things like that, but if we really want to understand the qualities of Krishna, we have to ask him or someone who knows him. That is ultimately the only way. Therefore, we put a high priority on revealed knowledge. Knowledge coming from other saintly persons, knowledge coming from enlightened persons, knowledge coming from a spiritual master, not just what we can perceive with our senses, because there's a limit to that. Does that make sense to everybody? I mean, even if you want to understand, just like since I was here last, Ramananda fixed up this place and so forth. Yeah, considerably so. But if you want to understand the nature of the person who fixed up the place, you could look around a little bit and see, and there's the man himself. But if you really want to know something about him, you have to talk to someone who's met him. You can't just look at his work and see from that. And ultimately, you have to meet him yourself. Yes?
You say yes.
Now, a lot of this discussion about the qualities of Krishna is based on the understanding that God is a person, which is a radical understanding for most people in the world. I mean, oh my goodness, thank you.
Oh.
I'm definitely in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Pulikanikani.
Pulikanikani, yeah. And our tree out there is starting to have pulikanikani. Thank you. Thank you, sir. All of you made me fall in love with Hawaii. When I was first visiting here, I didn't feel that way. And gradually, from all of your friendship and love, you know, coming here, it's like, why don't I live here anymore?
We're asking the same.
Sure. Thank you. Anyway, I was just a few days ago, I was speaking at a program in Auckland, New Zealand. And there were probably about 50, 60 people there. And for most of those people, the concept that God is a person was very peculiar. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them met with me. They had come for kirtan and prasadam. And some of those people met with me afterwards and said, you know, you were talking about Krishna's smile, but I don't understand how Krishna can smile. You know, how is that possible? She said, I just understand Krishna's being the light and the energy and so forth. So that we first of all understand that God is a person. He really is a person. You can put that over here, Ramananda. The mat. I think that would work here for people to sit on. And then the qualities we're going to be looking at tonight are only really well understood if we take it that God is a person. He's not obviously an ordinary person with an ordinary form. You know, he has no inside or outside exactly and no dimensions. You know, when Mother Yasoda tries to put a rope around his waist, she can't do it. She can't measure his waist. So he's wearing a belt. In those days, they didn't have playpens, so if your child was naughty, you tied them up. So she was trying to tie him up, and no matter how many ropes and hair strings she got, it kept being too short. And when she looked in his mouth, she saw the universe. So he's not a person like us, but still he's a person. He has his attributes, he has his qualities. So what we're going to be looking at today with Krishna's qualities are, again, what's called the six opulences. And these are ways of measuring prosperity. I think these are, again, at the end, after looking at these with Krishna, we're going to look at these with regard to ourself and understanding our nature in terms of career and service and how we work in the world. But these six ways of prosperity give us some indication that richness is not just a matter of cash. I think many times we think of richness as how much money you have. But if we think about things really deeply, we'll see that that's not true. You can have a rich, prosperous life without being cash rich, and you can be cash rich and have a very poor life.
Yeah.
And there's many, many different ways of being prosperous. So Krishna is the most prosperous of anyone in all possible ways to be prosperous. Now, all of these six kinds of prosperity also are in the person of prosperity, who is the consort of the Lord. So that also is a very interesting concept for most spiritual and religious traditions in the world, that God has a consort, that God has a wife or a girlfriend. In fact, he has quite a lot of them. And this idea, you know, that there is a consort of the Lord. And in one sense, the Lord and his consort are the same person. There really is, God is fully male and fully female, and at the same time, he's the supreme male who is married to the supreme female, or consorts with the supreme female. And she represents all of these kinds of prosperity. So in her original spiritual form, she represents these prosperity in spiritual, enlivening and enlightening ways that enrich everyone. And in her kind of mirror representation, she represents all these prosperities in ways that degrade people. So the first one we're going to look at is called Shri. Now, sometimes the Lord's consort is just called Shri. It can be a synonym for Lakshmi or for Radharani. But Shri is often translated as just beauty. Do any of you know what else Shri means besides just beauty?
Wealth.
Honor?
Well, these are all kinds of wealth, so all of these would apply to wealth. Well, a certain kind of honor, it's an honor that comes from charisma. So Shri applies to charismatic leadership. It also means splendor. So if you want to think about, you know, the king and queen who come on the, you know, onto the balcony, and this sort of splendorous beauty. Or if you think about a very charismatic leader who leads through inspiration and splendor, and I think of something like kind of sparkly. And Shri applies to anything that's beautiful, just like the artwork here, or the flowers, or musical instruments, or the grace of dance, or a beautiful garden that you have. Any of those things are part of Shri. So beauteous, splendorous charisma. And you think of sometimes, particularly when Krishna exhibited his opulence of Shri. So when he enters into Mathura, it's said that as Krishna walked through the streets of the city of Mathura, that everyone was just staring at his beauty. Now we will... Oh, you made it. Hare Krishna. So we find, of course, in this world, sometimes people may be enamored with a beautiful person, a movie star, a rock star. I sometimes tell this story how it was many, many years ago. When I was in an airport, there was this woman sitting waiting for a plane who was just, I think, one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my whole life. And everyone, male, female, who walked past her was just kind of like... You know, you can tell how long ago this was. At one point, she lit up a cigarette in the airport, and then nobody looked at her anymore, which was quite interesting. So you can tell how old this was. I'm sure right now, if you were to look at her, nobody would be staring at her, with however old she must be at the present time. But, you know, so sometimes a person in this world or some natural thing in this world may be so beautiful that we just stare at it, but not forever, you know, right? No matter how beautiful somebody is, at a certain point you get tired of them, you want to see someone else. They don't always have the same model on the covers of the magazines. But it says that when people see the beauty of the Lord, they wish they didn't blink. You know, the cowherd maidens in Vrindavan, they're saying, why do we have to blink? This is a defect in our body. You know, I don't even notice my blinking. I'm just staring and staring at the beauty of the Lord. And, you know, even that everybody wanted to see how beautiful Krishna was, so they just ran into the streets, dropped everything that they were doing, ran on the balconies, they were cooking something, whatever, they just dropped it. Let us see how beautiful Krishna is. And Krishna has an incarnation called Vamana, where he appears as a little boy, a little Brahmin boy, and he enters into the arena of Bali, who's engaged in a ritualistic religious performance. And as soon as everyone sees him again, they just stop what they're doing and they just stare at him. How is it possible for anyone to be this beautiful? You know, that it's just, it's just beyond even any kind of imagination. And of course, there's sometimes when the Lord takes the form of a woman. So he takes the form as Mohini, which means the enchantress. And that's a long story, but there the demigods, the celestial beings in the universe, they had been losing out to the demons in the universe. And they had gone to the Lord and said, we're being conquered by the demons, what can we do? And he said, well, temporarily declare a truce and say that together you want to churn immortal nectar. And this nectar will give you a long life. As long as you keep drinking it, you won't die, and you'll be very youthful and very healthy, very strong. So the demons agreed. And they went and they were churning this huge ocean of milk, just like we may take cream and churn it to make butter. And out came the nectar of immortality, and the demons immediately grabbed it. You know, they had this agreement they were going to share, but because they were demons, they weren't interested in sharing. So they grabbed this nectar. And so Krishna himself came as this very beautiful woman. If he had come as himself, the demons would have said, oh, we know you, you're God. We're not very interested in you, but because he came as a beautiful woman, they're just looking at her. And they said, who are you? Are you already married? We don't think you are. You're just kind of wandering here alone. You must be looking for someone to marry. Each of them were thinking, me, 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 me. And she said, you shouldn't trust me. She said, I'm not trustworthy. They said, oh, we trust you anyway. And you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of studies shown that beautiful people are more trusted.
Yeah.
You know, tall people are more trusted, beautiful people get what they more want. Trusted. They more get what they want, they earn more money in their life. Of course, there's a downside to that. I read some interviews with this couple who are musicians who are extraordinarily attractive, both the man and the woman. And they said nobody takes them seriously. No one thinks that they're good musicians. You know, if they tell someone they're a musician, they're like, well, you can't really play, right? You're just for decoration on the stage. But anyway, they just trusted Mohini because she was so beautiful. And she said, well, will you give me the nectar? Oh, sure. Will you give it to me and agree with whatever I do with it? Sure. And so she just gave it all to the demigods, cheated the demons. So, but she completely cheated them by her beauty. And we have when Krishna appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he goes to Jagannath Puri, and as soon as he goes in the temple and he sees the Lord, he faints in ecstasy. And he went into such a deep, ecstatic trance that people wondered if he was alive. He was barely breathing. And then the great scholar of the city, the scholar that was the advisor to the king, he came and he tested, and he saw, oh, this little cotton is moving if I put it in front of Chaitanya's nose. And so he had Lord Chaitanya brought to his home. And when Lord Chaitanya revived, this great scholar, Sarvabhauma, said to him, how old are you? He says, oh, I'm 24. He said, I see that you've renounced the world. You've become a monk. You've become a sannyasi. He said, I don't know how you're going to do that because you're so beautiful. And how are you going to maintain a life of austerity and celibacy when you're so extraordinarily beautiful? He says, the only cure is going to be you're going to have to study Vedanta philosophy in depth to maintain your vows of renunciation. But also this just enchanting beauty of the Lord. So, anybody want to also add anything about the Lord's beauty before we go on to the next? Would you like to add something?
I'd like to add something.
Sure.
I met this woman in art school and introduced her to Krishna consciousness, and I showed her pictures. This is in Philadelphia, and I showed her pictures of Radhashar Bihari.
Mm.
And she just fell in love with them. And she saw, you know, had a big picture of Shard Bihari's face. Well, first of all, she saw my pictures on my altar in my apartment, and she didn't say, oh, what's this? She said, who are these people? And then she saw a picture of Shar Bihari, and she's just like, isn't he beautiful? He's just so beautiful. And she eventually joined and got initiated by Satsarup Maharaj. And she also had a problem with being extraordinary. It was a problem, being extraordinarily beautiful. She was a runway model, and men were constantly bothering her.
Yes.
And she said, I just want to get paper sack and cut eyes on it and just put it over my head. You know, I mean, so there's problems,
yeah.
You know. But yeah. Anyway, Krishna is just so all attractive. And you know.
So even very beautiful people are attracted to the beauty.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Isn't beauty supposed to be the highest of his qualities?
Beauty sometimes it's explained like that, yeah.
I heard that. It was a little controversial, or...
Yeah. Sometimes it says that Balaram is his incarnation of beauty. Sometimes it says that Balaram...
Vishwanath says that very clearly.
Yes.
In his Sarartha Darshan. That of all six opulences, Sri reigns supreme. Mm-hmm. All the others exist within it.
Within that one. Mm-hmm. Well, that also makes sense because Lakshmi or Radha, it's called Sri, and contains all the opulences. Yes.
So when will we be able to experience that?
Well, we can experience it a little bit
in the world.
We can experience a little bit through Krishna's energies in the world. Certainly. We can also experience it by hearing about it. What happens when we hear about these opulences of Krishna, if we become even a little bit attracted, then Krishna becomes interested and starts to reveal himself to us. Jiva Goswami says that the Lord enters our consciousness through the path of our meditation. So what we think, if we think about him, you know, just like if people are thinking about you, you want to visit them, right? So why did I come? Well, I communicate with Chakra and his wife. They think about me, and with some of you. And then you think, well, if people are thinking about me, why don't I want to come and see them? You understand? So it's like that. Even to come here, frankly, was some trouble. Instead of a non-stop from Auckland to Houston, I had to take 2 flights here, and then I have to take 3 flights there. So I substituted 5 flights for 3 for 1, so I got an extra 4 flights. But I... Oh, and just a quick visit, but why? Because if there's people who love you, you naturally want to see them. If you love them and they love you. So if we meditate on Krishna's qualities and hear about Krishna's qualities, he actually reveals himself to us. You know, I remember when I first moved into the ashram in Chicago, and at first, frankly, I had a little bit of a hard time with deity worship. You know, I really had a hard time with deity worship. I couldn't understand... Why are these devotees worshipping statues? It just didn't, you know, it bothered me. And I kind of tried to push it out of my mind, but it was disturbing. And in the meantime, I was actually doing service for the deities. I was making the flower garlands, and I was polishing their silver. And after a couple weeks, I looked at the deities, and I went, oh, they're beautiful. They're not just statues. So... You know, that was a tiny, minuscule bit of revelation that I had. But that was because Krishna was pleased with me. So it's also like that, you know, as we hear about him. Yes?
Well, for those that can't appreciate Krishna as a person, you're talking, this place, this island.
Yes.
Explodes with extraordinary beauty.
Absolutely.
And he says in Bhagavad Gita, all that is beautiful, glory, and mighty springs but from the spark of my splendor.
Yes.
So when we appreciate his creation.
Yes, definitely. And this is a very good place to do that. Any other thoughts about beauty? Or Shri or charisma? Huh?
Beauty controls everything.
Mm.
Not power, not opulence.
You. Yes. And in fact, as I was, you know, as we mentioned, the Sanskrit word Sri also means charismatic leadership. So it means when you're attracting people through your charisma, which actually is what controls everybody, much more than just power. All right, now we're going to look at Virya. So Virya means... physical strength, it means sexual potency, it means mental strength. Any kind of health is in the category of virya. Youthfulness is in the category of virya. So, virya means the power to control your senses, the power to learn things. Any kind of strength of or ability is there in virya. Now, Sri would also apply to grace. So if you think about like a gymnast or an acrobat or a dancer, they would have to have a combination of virya and shri. You know, just somebody who's powerlifting, that's just virya. But if you have somebody, you know, leaping across the stage, so that's Virya and Shri together. And of course, Krishna demonstrated his strength when he lifted Govardhan Hill. So he lifted Govardhan Hill. He's just appeared to be a very young boy, like 7 years old. And he just used the little finger of his left hand, which, you know, I can't do much of anything with that. So I certainly couldn't lift up a table or a chair. And he just held it there for a week. You know, so strong that his strength can be exhibited in just a tiny endeavor on his part, or practically speaking, no endeavor at all. And as Ram, he broke the bow of Lord Shiva. So it was very interesting when Sita, his future wife, was very young. She had moved this bow to get some ball or something that was under the bow. And when her father saw that, he said, "Oh, now I know how to find a suitable husband. Whoever can lift this bow can marry her," because according to some accounts, it took 300 people to move the bow, and some accounts, 1,500 people to move the bow. So it was a very, very heavy bow. It was a bow belonging to Shiva, the greatest of the celestials, the greatest of the demigods. And when Ram came for the competition, he lifted the bow with his left hand, and when he went to string it, and he strung it, the bow actually snapped. So he was so strong that just the act of putting on the string was enough to split the bow, and it made this huge cracking sound, you know, that reverberated, and people were knocked down off of where they were sitting. And of course, we can see his strength in nature, the strength of the water. Right? We worry about tsunamis here, the strength of the water, the strength of the wind, which, you know, a huge windstorm, it can knock over huge, substantial things. And then the strength of all the planets floating in space. It's said that Krishna is holding the planets, each planet's just on his head, like a little speck of dust. And he's just holding it. You know, he doesn't feel anything from that. And one of one of the things I really like to meditate on in terms of Krishna's strength is when he was killing the demoniac ruler Kamsa. So he comes to Mathura and he looks just like a young boy. 16 years old, or some say 11 years old. He was a very young boy. And he was very delicate. So he hadn't been, you know, going to the gym and powerlifting. He didn't look like a gorilla guy. But he was just very, very delicate looking. And in fact, when Krishna was wrestling with the wrestlers before he killed Kamsa, so many people were objecting that these big mountainous guys were wrestling with this little delicate boys. You know, this was unfair. But even though he was very delicate and very soft, he could just take this massive, cruel leader and just, you know, so he has, although he's very strong, he appears very delicate. This combination, and of course we see that in material energy, like we're saying how air is very strong, but you know, where's the air? It's so subtle, and yet it has such power. Or water, you know, you go in the water and you can just move it. It's just soft. The water is just soft. And yet it's so strong. And so Krishna has this combination of this really soft, delicate nature and great strength. Of course, we talk about how the great pure devotees are like this. They're like a rose, but like a thunderbolt. You know, very, very delicate. And so Krishna has this quality of strength. But he also has the strength of potency. So Aham Bija Pradapita, he's the father of everyone. You know, an ordinary father can sire a few children. Or if you're, you know, was it Genghis Khan, that his DNA is like spread all over Europe. You know, it's like so many people in the world today have some DNA from Genghis Khan. He had so many children. So you might have some big guy who fathered children with hundreds of women or something, but Krishna is the father of everyone, every living being, the flowers, the birds, the fish, the microbes, all of us. So this is unbelievable potency and power, and he's also eternally youthful. Ajam Puranam Purusham Naviyoganamcha. So people think of God as an old man, as the painting in the Sistine Chapel, right? God, the old man, holding out his hand. But we see that he's always youthful. And he's youthful in exuberance, he's youthful in playfulness, So this is also virya. And of course, you know, we say we're all attracted to beauty, we're also very attracted to youth and youthful energy. It's definitely one of the main attractive features of somebody, is that youthfulness. Any other thoughts on Krishna with virya? Yes, Arnold.
Yes, I have a question about, you were just using the example about the wrestling match. And
yes.
There's that famous verse where it talks about how the yogi see him in some way.
Oh, yeah.
So my question is about the ordinary people that saw Krishna in the wrestling match. They saw him as an ordinary man. Now, we have the experience, we see somebody strong, we see somebody beautiful, we're just attracted to them. But why is it that the ordinary people saw him as just ordinary?
Well, some people saw Krishna as an ordinary man because their love with him is so intimate. You know, like the members of the Yadu dynasty, they just thought, oh, he's the best person in our dynasty. So Krishna likes very intimate devotees that don't really remember that he's God. So some of the people at the wrestling arena were like that. But also Krishna comes to this world and shows his pastimes to attract people of the world. So and some people who join Krishna's pastimes in the material world are already very elevated. Some of them are coming with him from the spiritual world. Some of them are people who perform sadhana bhakti and are joining those pastimes. And some of them are joining those pastimes in their eternal form. And some of them are joining in another form. Forget whether it's Jiva Goswami or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. I'm pretty sure it's in a commentary in Ujjwala Nilamani, where they're saying that the wives of some of the Kurus and the wives of some of the Yadus, when they saw Krishna, they became attracted to him and wanted to marry him in the future. So it's not like today where you're married to someone and you divorce and you marry somebody else. So they weren't going to do that. But in other words, so they weren't in their ultimate rasa of being married to Krishna, but still they were in Krishna's pastimes in the material world. So there are people who join Krishna's pastimes in the material world as a part of their understanding. So those people at all different levels of understanding that Krishna is attracting. Same with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was interacting with people at all different levels. Some of them were his eternal associates. Some of them were people who were joining the eternal associates from the ranks of sadhakas. And some of them were people who, by some good fortune, had the opportunity to see him. And they may have originally just thought, oh, here's some ordinary person. Oh, but I really like him. I really want to be with him. I really want to serve him. And that sparks their devotional life. Is that all right?
So it's not that they did not recognize his beauty, but they just thought of him as being ordinary.
Well, even the demons can recognize Krishna's beauty. It said like Kali.
What did he say? He's not recognized as what?
As God. They're recognizing his beauty, but not recognizing him as God.
What does the verse actually say? Because that verse, that would be the sort of like the answer. Because they saw him as, like, some of them fell in love with him. Some of them were like, he's super dangerous, like, he's
yeah.
God of death. Some of them, so, but then some people just saw him as an ordinary person. But that doesn't mean, they mean like an ordinary person that's super beautiful and super cool.
Right.
Just like a person that's awesome, you know? Wow, yes. That's an awesome person. But they didn't recognize him as like...
As God.
Yeah.
Super cool. Yeah, well, not really.
You see people, you know, like, oh, you don't think they're God, but they're beautiful or something. You just think they're ordinary.
Or they're extraordinarily, but you think that they're human.
Yeah, you just still think that you still consider them like, okay.
I mean, there are plenty of people on this planet right now who can do things that are completely amazing that we don't understand. Even magicians who do things that you're going, how in the world? Oh! Thank you. Now you just think, how do they do that? But you think that they're human. You don't think that they're God. I mean, they're magicians who do things that you're just like, are they actually using magic? Right? You're wondering, you know, is that real magic? But you don't think it can follow. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's good.
Any other thoughts on Krishna with virya?
Also, you alluded to the fact that Kaviraj Goswami says, Aishwarya Gyanete Sabha Jagat Nishvita Aishwarya Siti Lopreem Nahi Mor Prita. If they think that my Aishwarya and my opulence is the reason for their love, I don't like that at all.
Yes.
Aishwarya Siti Laprem, because it reduces the love exchange between that person and myself.
Yes, exactly. I mean, even for us, if we think, well, someone's loving me because I'm rich or I'm beautiful, like that woman.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very good example. She actually didn't like it when people were interested in her just for her beauty. She wanted people to be interested in her for who she was. And that her extraordinary beauty was a kind of hindrance for that. And people like that, they really wonder, you know, are you just attracted to me superficially or do you really love me? Isn't it? Yeah? Okay, yes.
I thought of another example of virya when you were talking about softness and powerful at the same time. The roots of a plant.
Oh.
They can cut through granite.
Yes.
They can chop up sidewalks, roads.
That is such a nice example, and they're so soft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yes. You have, I don't know if any of you ever burn real frankincense, the resin.
Yeah.
You have. So I like to get my frankincense from Oman. I mean, some comes from India, some gets the best place. Some comes from Somalia, but that's the best place. And there, the trees that produce frankincense, they grow in rock.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They grow in rock. Rock. Stone.
Yeah.
They don't grow in rocky soil. They grow in rock.
You see that in Yosemite.
Yeah. So you see...
That's the case here as well.
Yes, of course. That's how
I have zero soil where I live. But there's trees everywhere.
Yes.
What are they growing in? One thing, rock.
They're growing in the rock, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that, of course, brings up... We often say that those who don't... Those who, even though they chant and experience some ecstatic symptoms, you know, but they don't actually develop love for Krishna, they have a steel-framed heart or a rock heart. Mm. But Krishna's strength is like that, although he's very soft and delicate, and just this very beautiful young boy, he can break the rock in our heart like that. The bhakti, even if you have a rock-hard heart, that the seed of bhakti, when planted by the pure devotee, can actually break the rock in your heart, just like those trees. And just like the frankincense tree, it breaks the rock in your heart and then it comes out with this wonderful fragrance, healing fragrance of prema. So now on to Gyan. So Gyan is wisdom and knowledge, and of course Krishna knows everything. He's omniscient, so he has all knowledge. And he's conversant in all departments of knowledge. And Rupa Goswami says he also strictly follows moral principles. Of course, we could argue with that, I suppose. But Rupa Goswami does say that. That he also has wisdom about what to do and what not to do. Because wisdom isn't just that you know, the workings of the atom or the movements of the stars, or you can, you know, give the biography of some great people. It's not just that kind of wisdom. But as Krishna talks about understanding in the modes of nature, it's to be able to understand what should be done and what should not be done. What is good and what is not good. So Krishna has this kind of wisdom that he knows exactly what is the most right and useful thing to do. And also Rupa Goswami talks about how Krishna is very clever, that with one action he accomplishes many things. So my youngest son was talking about writing a book on this subject, as how you could be more productive. So rather than multitasking in terms of I'm going to try to juggle, you know, 10 different things at one time, find one thing to do that accomplishes many purposes. So you're focusing on one thing, but that one thing is accomplishing 10 things. And that's what Krishna does all of the time. Yes, and we've seen this in our own life, where something happens and that one thing that happens that Krishna does creates so many other things. Right? Another way in which Krishna is... Yes.
Did he give any examples of that?
He did, but I can't remember what they are. I'm sorry. And also, Rupa Goswami talks about how Krishna is very expert by quickly executing a difficult task easily. So this also requires a lot of wisdom. And of course, it's interesting that although Krishna knows everything, that he also, for his pastimes, appears not to know things. And I think one of the most interesting is that you could say, well, if you already knew everything, then life would be boring. Even we feel that way, that when we master a subject, when we get to a certain point of mastery, then we kind of want to go on to something else. You know, okay, I've mastered that. Is there something else that I can study? Is there something else that I can learn how to do? So why doesn't that happen to Krishna? Why isn't he bored? And so it's explained that Krishna is always expanding. He's not static, he's dynamic. So what there is to know is also always expanding. So he knows everything, and though he knows everything, there's always more to know. And I was thinking that even that's true to some extent about ourselves, which is why we're so interested in, you know, going to an astrologer or a palm reader, or nowadays on the internet, it's like, what Disney character are you? You know, what fruit flavor are you? And there's just all these, I've never done any of them, but you see them all over the place. And people are always trying to find out more about themselves, you know, let me take some kind of test. I remember when Paramahamsa was here and he was doing those personality tests. Some of you were here then. You know, and it was so fascinating to do those and then sit down with him and he's analyzing and, you know, well, you're a rabbit and you're this and you're that.
You're a rabbit.
Yeah, this, I was a mountain lion. So,
I could have told you that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Krishna. So, you know, but that was so interesting. And somebody does some test and sits with you and tells you more about yourself. You know, I think we become very anxious. Oh, can you tell me? I was at a devotee's house in Australia recently, and we were waiting for a program to begin in another location, and one of the ladies there was saying how she used to make her living from doing tarot cards and palm readings. So immediately everybody said, oh, look at my palm, look at my palm, look at my palm. And we're so interested to find out more about ourselves. So Krishna's also like that. He also wants to find out more about himself, and he's constantly expanding, so there's always more to know. I remember reading an article once that what kills relationships is the death of mystery. If you feel I've already learned everything about my partner, you get bored. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears because Krishna says, you know, I can't understand how Radharani loves me. What does she see me? What does she experience? Now again, you might ask, if Krishna knows everything, why is there these things he doesn't know? What does she taste when she loves me? What does she find attractive? What's the nature of her love for me? And then he says, well, I need to take her mood to find that out. I can't find that out from my perspective. I have to go into her perspective. And if you think about the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is eternal, and Krishna is eternal, so that means this question keeps arising in him, and he keeps answering the question. You follow? And why is that? Because the love of Radharani is dynamic, and Krishna's qualities are also dynamic. So it's not that once it's understood, that's all that can be understood. Is that funny? Right, so I was thinking about some stories that illustrate Krishna's intelligence. And one of my favorites is the punishing of Aswatthama. So Aswatthama had killed Draupadi's 5 sons. Oh, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Nice to see you. He killed them in their sleep at the end of the war. So he really shouldn't have killed anybody. The war was over. And it was for no good purpose. His boss, Duryodhan, said, you know, you didn't kill the Pandavas, you killed their sons, and these were the people who were going to carry on the dynasty. This is also my dynasty. What did you do? Right? And their mother, Draupadi, was, of course, devastated. All of her children were dead. And her husband, Arjuna, he said, I'm going to go capture him, and you can take your bath standing on his head. Right? Cut off his head, bathe standing on his head. So he brings back Aswatthama, and when he brings him back, Draupadi changes her mind. And she says, you know, his father died in the war, and his father was your teacher, and this is their only child, and if you kill him, yes, he deserves to be killed for murdering my 5 children, but if you kill him, then his mother will also be bereft of all of her children. And I don't want her to cry like I'm crying. So there was this debate going on as to whether Aswatthama should be executed or not. And Krishna told Arjuna, yes, for murdering these 5 sleeping boys, he should be executed, but because he's the son of your teacher, he should not be executed. And then, of course, Arjuna decided on a punishment for Aswatthama that would be worse than death, to remove his jewel, which was giving him power, and to exile him. So how to kill him without killing him. So Krishna, and it's a very interesting story to understand what is dharma, what is the right thing to do. Many times when we have a decision, we think, is it this thing or this thing? Right? But maybe it's something else. Maybe it's this and this. Or maybe it's something else. So Krishna is very intelligent and very wise, and that he often sees solutions to problems. It's fine. Baby's laughing. If anyone's disturbed by babies laughing, I don't know what to say. One of the nicest sounds in the world is the sound of little children laughing. So Krishna is very intelligent like that, and I think we see this phenomena in our own life. Yes? That sometimes we're wondering what to do, and we think, well, should I do this? Should I do this? And Krishna comes up with a solution that's so different than we imagined, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And we're just like, that was a really good solution. But I never would have thought of that. It was something just phenomenal that solved everything and gave me something much, much better than I ever would have imagined. I thought Krishna was very clever in moving the whole dynasty from Mathura to Dwarka. You know, they were being attacked in Mathura, and he just moved his dynasty to the middle of the ocean, basically. And I think they just kind of woke up and they were in a new place. And I also think it was really amazing. So Krishna is having this battle, and he leaves the battle because this Kalyavana is attacking him. And he doesn't want to kill Kalyavana personally. They had codes of combat so that you didn't fight with somebody who was inferior to you. That wasn't fair. So he didn't want to kill this Kalyavana directly. There were other reasons he didn't want to kill him directly. So he just, he was also untouchable, yes. So he walks away from the battlefield, and Krishna's just kind of walking casually away from the battlefield. But this Kalyavana is chasing him, and can't catch him. So then Krishna walks into this cave of Muchikunda, and Muchikunda had this benediction that he could sleep until he woke up on his own. I'm sure we've all done that, right? I am turning off all my alarms, and I'm going to sleep until I wake up naturally, right? So Muchikunda had this benediction, and that if anybody woke him up untimely, that if he looked at them, they would die, they would burn into ashes. So Krishna goes into this cave, because he knew it was time for Muchikunda to wake up, and he wanted to see Muchikunda. And at the same time, he wanted to kill Kalyavana, but he didn't want to kill himself. So he goes into the cave, and he kind of goes into the shadows of the cave. And Kalyavana comes, and he sees this man sleeping in this cave. And he thinks, huh, Krishna came here and went to sleep. So he goes to wake up the sleeping man, who immediately burns into ashes. And then Krishna reveals himself to Muchikunda. So I thought that was very, very clever. And of course, we have a similar thing with Vrikasura. When Vrikasura gets this benediction from Lord Shiva that anyone whose head he touches, the head will crack and the person will die. And then he tries to kill Lord Shiva, who gave him the benediction. And so he comes to the planet of the Lord, and the Lord takes a disguise as a devotee of Shiva, a little brahmachari devotee of Shiva. And he just bewilders this guy. He just says, oh, you must be very tired from traveling all over. You have to rest your body. Your body is so valuable. And the guy's thinking, yeah, my body is really valuable. And he calls him, oh, son of Shakuni. And he thinks, oh, he knows my family. Oh, I can trust him. You know, and then he says, so what are you running for? Oh, I want to kill Lord Shiva by touching his head. He said, oh, that Lord Shiva, he hangs out with the ghosts and the demons. You can't trust him. His benedictions don't work. And that was really interesting, is the Lord says to this Vrikasura, he says, why don't you test the benediction by touching your own head? And if it doesn't work, then you can kill this lying Shiva. Now that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. He was already trying to kill Shiva by touching Shiva's head. But Krishna's so clever, and the guy's like, that's a really good idea. Any other thoughts on Krishna's intelligence and wisdom?
Krishna is sometimes outdone in his attempt to be intelligent.
Mm.
He says, Napare ham nirabhadya samyutam. Svasadu krityam vibhudayu sapiva. You've done something for me that, and I'm trying, I've put all my time and energy into it, my infinite time and energy, and I can't figure out how to repay you.
Yes, and he says, you know, he is yetam apapajante. So Krishna says, I always reciprocate. And generally, what we say to people is, if you give everything to Krishna, he gives everything to you. Well, his everything to you is going to be a lot more than your everything to him. But for the gopis, he says, no. He says, you've given up your families, you've given up social mores, so many things, but I haven't. I haven't made that same sacrifice for you. So I'm eternally your debtor. We were just studying that verse a few days ago. Yes?
The ones that really spoke to me was the blame games that people have with Krishna.
Oh.
So Duryodhana will say, Krishna, this is all your fault. The battlefield, all this death, this is... And then Krishna has a knack for keeping scores, like Duryodhana. I had gone to, you know, twice. You tried to have me arrested. I gave you my universal form. I don't show this to anybody. And he did the same thing again with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra had blamed him.
Mm.
And so Krishna always seems to have his bases covered. So he has this checklist with you. And I've had that same sense of experience where
if you blame Krishna for something, he has an answer.
And he lets you know, well, actually, you know, there was this situation in you.
Yes, yes, very nice. I just thought about Nisenga Dev also. Right, so Srimani Kashyapa has this benediction. I get this benediction, this blessing. I won't be killed inside or outside. Nisingadeva, okay, says, what about doorways? Right? Not the land, the sea, the sky. He says, what about my lap? Nothing living, nothing dead. Well, the ends of my nails, they're kind of living and dead. They're neither in both. Not an animal, not a man. Okay, what about a half animal, half man? Right? Now, what about not the day or the night? Well, what about the twilight? What about the dusk? Right, so he was the thing, you know, Harani Kashyapu thought I got it covered here. And I was at a class where the Prabhupada gave in Philadelphia in 75 where he told that story and he said, you cannot cheat Krishna. He's much more clever than anything you can come up with. Any other thoughts on intelligence and wisdom? Yes.
One more thing. It's so awesome and inconceivable that Krishna can be in all of our hearts and know everything about us. How is that possible?
And not everything just about us now, but everything in every lifetime we've ever lived forever.
Right.
I can't even remember everything I did yesterday. You can't remember everything even about the people you love and your family. You know. Yeah, but he remembers it. And he's actually interested. That astonishes me the most. That Krishna's actually interested in everything I've done and everything I've thought and everything I did. It's also how intelligent he is to bring together everybody's destinies. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just like, how does he do that?
Yeah.
You know, I used to teach an individualized classroom of up to 30 kids, age 5 to 18. And everybody's doing something different. And I had to keep track of what everybody's doing. And I didn't always work. And the kids never tell you if you forget that they had a paper due. You know, they don't let you know. The very first time I did that, first time that I ever tried to teach this multi-level individualized, that I only had 15 kids, and I took over my classroom and another teacher's classroom when she went to India for 6 weeks. And when she came back, she said, this is great, but the 6-year-olds don't have any handwriting done. I'm like, oops. I just forgot. I just slipped through the cracks, you know. And I had to have this very complicated record-keeping system in pencil. I had to do it in pencil. You know, and very, very complicated to keep track of what everybody was doing. And that was only up to 30 kids. You know, and how do you coordinate? I mean, you just think about this. Not even just the humans, but the bugs and the plants and the animals. And how does he bring together the right beings at the right time for the right thing? And, you know, I think about the time I was driving from Hillsborough, North Carolina to Atlanta, Georgia. And I was on a stretch of the highway. I was the only car on the highway in both directions, driving 70 miles an hour. And I was almost at Atlanta. And a car came from the other direction, bounced across the median, went right in front of me, maybe 1 yard. Would have gone right into the driver's side. If I had been 1 second ahead on that road, would have gone right into the driver's side. But went right in front of my car. And I was driving so fast, and this would have been, you know, there was no way I could have avoided this accident. It was so fast. The car from the other side, and then bounced and went into the woods. So I thought, the split-second timing that I didn't get injured was nothing to my car and me at all, but I was the only witness. This was way before the days of mobile phones. I got off at the nearest exit, I called the police, and I said, there's a car there, you know, with somebody in it. And I thought about, you know, what determined where I was at that moment that I could both be a witness to this accident, so if the driver was not dead, somebody could... Nobody would even know there was a car there. You know, we just went into the woods. Nobody would have known there was a car there. And yet I wasn't injured. And that's just the destiny of two people. But if you think of the destiny of so many people, and how does he engineer, and so many living beings, how does he engineer that? All right, let's go on now to Yasha. So Yasha is interesting because Yasha in the Bhagavatam is a person whose parents are Kirti and Dharma. So Kirti means just to talk about someone, like we have the word kirtan. And Dharma means, of course, doing the right thing, doing what you're supposed to be doing. So if you have Kirti and Dharma, then you're famous for good things. So people talk about you not because you've robbed a bank or, you know, because you've married 15 times or something. They talk about you because you've done something laudable. So this is being well known for spotless character. And of course, we can say everybody has always heard of God. Even people who don't like him have heard of him. Even the atheists have heard of him. He is the most well-known. This is also the opulence of community. Because you can't be well-known for good deeds unless you have some kind of a community. Unless there are people who know you. And of course, Krishna has unlimited living entities that are part of his own intimate community. So we try to think about some pastimes involving Krishna being praised for his good qualities. We think about how when he lifted Govardhan Hill, all the residents of Vrindavan were praising him for his meritorious activities. Or, like Prabhupada says, when you chant Hare Krishna, you can remember how Krishna kills the demons and the cowherd boys are clapping and saying, well done, well done. And of course the demigods are all showering flowers that he's famous throughout the universe. Anyone else can think of a pastime where Krishna is famous and glorified? Yes?
Mathura.
In Mathura, when everybody comes out to see him. So oh, beauty and fame, yes.
The Rasa dance.
The Rasa dance.
I mean, everybody comes from showers.
Yes, everyone comes from all over the universe to see the Rasa dance.
If I can actually add a little bit to Krishna killing demons. Sometimes people when hear that, you know, they don't know what's behind it, you know, they think it's just a killing, but no, it's actually these people that are killed by Krishna are being liberated.
Yes, so Krishna is killing, when he kills the demons, what he actually kills is their sinful deeds, and then they attain to some level of spiritual perfection. Any other thoughts on fame?
Interesting that Krishna's mother is named Yashoda.
Yes.
Means she gives not only him, she gives all Brajbasis fame, but she spawns Krishna,
yes,
the all-attractive.
Yes.
And is present for all of his pastimes, even up to and beyond Mathura.
That is very nice. And I would like to hear more from you on that sometime.
And Sri Radha's mother's name? Sri Radha Rani's mother's name?
You can use one of the back rooms if you
same
want.
Same meaning.
Kirtida, yes, because she's doing Kirti.
Yeah.
We have bedrooms if you want.
Da.
Jashoda.
Kirtida and Yashoda, yes, the two kinds of fame. And then we have Vairagya. So Vairagya is an interesting opulence. Vairagya is the opulence of renunciation and detachment and freedom, which in one sense, without that, all the other opulences are kind of unattractive. If somebody is beautiful but proud, it's kind of, it spoils it, doesn't it? You know? Anything else you have if you're proud. So, there was one time when, we used to all the time in North Carolina, we used to show devotional videos after the Sunday feast program. And what I usually would do, because we were the only ones in those days who had, we had the school, so we had a big projector and screen. Nobody else had big screens in those days. So I would get a plate of prasadam from the temple, and then I would usually eat it in the dark while we were watching the movie. And what had happened, there had been some fig chutney that was spoiled. And it was, someone had put it right on the top of everything else. And so it spoiled everything. And so I think of arrogance like that. You know, it's just this thing, I went to eat this plate in the dark and everything was blah, blah. So when there's arrogance and attachment, everything becomes weird. Yeah. So this opulence of renunciation is, it's very glorious. Now, sometimes, materially, we don't understand that renunciation is an opulence. We think it's the giving up of all opulences. But it's actually very, very attractive. It's extremely attractive. If you think like Einstein was not only attractive for his knowledge and his wisdom, but also for his simplicity and renunciation. There's a very famous story about Einstein that he went to a movie theater in New Jersey a little too early. You know, he tended to be kind of this absent-minded professor. So he paid for his ticket, and then the ticket teller said, you know, you can come back in an hour. And he said, well, how will you remember that I paid? You know, he was one of the most famous people in the world. And very distinctive appearance. And the teller just laughed. He said, we will all know you, Albert Einstein. But he had this very simple humility. Or one time he was invited to meet with some heads of state in Europe, the royalty. And they expected him to come in a first-class train, but he came in the third-class train. And so when he came out to the station, there was no one to greet him because they were waiting for him by the first-class train. And so he just found his own cab and went, you know, he didn't think that the royalty was going to pick him up. So he had this kind of renunciation, this kind of humility. And so it's actually quite attractive. Yes?
You know, Mula's father was a student of Albert Einstein at Caltech.
Really?
Wow. And he and a number of others were so close to the man that he said no less than 20 times was he asked to scale the side of Einstein's building. He lived in the upper unit of a two-story apartment. And Mula's dad had to climb up the trellis onto the balcony to get into the house because Einstein literally never remembered to bring his keys with him. And he also commented how Einstein was regularly found pacing the football field with nothing but his underwear on, completely completely absorbed in thought about his projects.
Yes.
The zone.
So this is renunciation, this detachment. And it's actually a very great opulence. I mean, Krishna gives the devotees detachment and equilibrium from the world. We also see he's detached in that he doesn't interfere with the free will of the living entities. You know, if you want to do something terrible that's going to mess you up, he'll give you good advice. He'll say, look, this is what you should do. But he'll let you do what you want to do. We don't always do that. If someone does something we don't approve of, you know, we may try to manipulate them, coerce them, criticize them, ruin them. And Krishna's like, you know, you want to do something I don't approve of, well, I'll facilitate that. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
I don't know if this happens to other devotees or other folks here, but and I guess it's my mind doing it, but I'm taking care of my Tulsi. I'm taking care of Tulsi. And then all of a sudden in my mind, you are so wonderful because this Tulsi is here at your house. Or whatever. It's all of a sudden something is saying how wonderful I am because of something that's going on around me.
Yes.
So is this just the mind?
Well, it's funny how we try to take personal credit for all these things that we can't take personal credit for. But I was listening to a very interesting talk that Srila Prabhupada gave on Bhagavad Gita 16.4, I think it is, about Dumba, about pride. And he was saying that, you know, we tend to be proud of anything. We're proud that we're a dog, or we're proud that we're American or something. And then he said, but when you come to the spiritual platform, you can actually be proud that you are the confidential servant of Krishna. And he said, but you must be on the spiritual platform. Otherwise, it will be degrading. And sometimes Prabhupada would exhibit that, but that's really pride in your master. You know, I have the best master. So Prabhupada said that kind of pride is actually beneficial.
So the false pride, where does that come from? Is that Maya Devi just taking charge?
Well, it's very nice in Raghunathas Goswami's Manashiksha, so this is the last obstacle. This, I am a great devotee mentality. Well, I have Tulsi. I am therefore a great devotee. Which is a little different from, I am a servant of the greatest. Because Raghunathas Goswami says, you cure this by being a servant of the great devotees. That's how you cure it. Where does it come from? It's our most deep-seated attachment in this world. That I am the best, I am the greatest, I am the most to be honored. And for those on a spiritual path, this shows up that I am the best devotee. You know, we stop thinking maybe that I'm the best, you know, on a material level, but we start thinking I'm the best. And I want everyone to acknowledge that. I want everyone to you know, I have a big Tulsi growing in my house. And let me tell you about it. And, oh, you're such a great devotee. Yes, that's right. You know, and we may be saying externally, oh, no, but inside we're going, oh, boy, they finally figured it out. And this is the internal, this is the root. Bhaktivinoda says this is the root of all of our other problems. So we simply transfer that from I'm, you know, the best person in the material world to I'm the greatest saintly person. And it's interesting. Raghunathas Goswami says you cure this by serving the great saintly persons. That's the cure. But where does it come from? It's the root of our rebellion. Where does it come from? It comes from our rebellion.
Thinking we are the body, the essence of,
yes,
the fundament of all things.
Yes, definitely.
False ego.
Yeah.
I think it's a little dangerous to think I'm the best devotee. I'm a great preacher, and I'm humble too. It's a little dangerous. You're not a piece in each age.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is a safe position.
So Prabhupada doesn't say to be proud about being the best of all. He said you can be proud that I am the confidential servant of Krishna.
How proud to be a wine. I don't know. I think pride is very tricky. Maya is very tricky. And you start to find a loophole where you can be proud.
I agree with you. But I did find it reassuring that at a certain state of total humility, there is a kind of pride on the other side.
But you probably won't see it exhibited so much.
No, and there's, you know, it's one of the ecstasies. There's a pride that's a kind of ecstasy also. But yeah, it's quite different from what we're looking at here. I would agree with you that we don't want to make a door for any sort of, well, Prabhupada said in that circumstance you could be proud. So let me go for it. Yeah. Yes.
I was thinking when I was first coming to the temple, the example that we're all a servant, and of course nobody wants to be a servant of anybody.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So be a servant of the greatest person. There was a whole story of the little boy.
Yes.
who, you know, I think, you know, he was serving a tax collector, found out that he went and offered obeisances to somebody, he gave the money to somebody, you know, and it goes on
and on to the highest person.
To the highest person.
I'll tell you, I do have a little tiny bit of practical realization that it is totally blissful to think I am a minuscule servant of Krishna. And that blissfulness has something in it that's some sort of feeling good about yourself. That if you really feel like, I'm just a very tiny, insignificant servant of Krishna and my guru. I'm their servant. And there's something about that that just, it's a kind of self-esteem that is really sweet.
We should feel fortune.
Yes.
We should feel gratitude.
Gratitude.
Yeah, I don't know what, I just know that I felt it sometimes. I'm not sure what nomenclature I can put on it, what I can call it. And I know that it's not like what I've experienced with my tremendous, overwhelming experience of material pride and arrogance and self-esteem, that it's not the same thing. It's just not the same thing that I experience most of the time, the thinking, oh, I'm so good at this, and I'm so good at that, and, you know, and I should be noticed for this or that. It's a different creature. It's like, I'm a servant. I'm a servant. Wow. I'm a servant, and I'm just a servant of the servant of the servant. Wow! I'm so small, and I'm a servant of my guru, Krishna. Whoa! And it's just this, I don't know how to describe it, and I don't know what I would call it, but it's something where you feel really, 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 really good about yourself for without this. And I'm humble too. It's not that. It's something else. And again, I don't think I can stamp it with something and call it something of this world. But I have smelled it a little bit from a distance and thought, whoa, that's nice. Yeah?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we should have pride to be the servant of Radharani. Radhika Dasi Hoy Radhika Dasi Jani Hoy Abhiman. And he says that then quickly we'll meet Gokula Khan, meet Krishna.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
I couldn't hear what she said, but I was thinking it couldn't be because you're functioning in your constitutional position.
Most likely.
And Krishna's pleased.
Most likely.
You're actually doing what he created you to do.
Most likely, that's the cause of it. But what exactly that is that's so sweet? It is some sense, something that's something like self-esteem. It's something like that. But again, I don't know what I would call it.
Called Abhiman.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Abhiman.
Abhiman. There you go. Yes.
Well, I was going to say celebration, and having that sense of celebration and honor for it. The lack of it is impersonalism, and it's
definitely
serious. I see it as sort of the mode of ignorance. So, in the name of humility, we're expecting others to be humble. We're in fact, I think, it's actually a kind of opera.
That's very interesting you say that. So we could definitely talk about this topic for a few months. Yeah. I think when we've opened up here, it's like, wow, this is a rich, rich, rich mind. So how do we give up pride but not be an impersonalist? And how do we have this deep humility with this Abhiman of I'm a servant without this corresponding pride of I'm a servant, I'm the servant.
What's Abhiman?
What would you call it? What
Abhiman,
would you define
Abhiman
it?
Is pride.
It is pride.
And if you have, you're supposed to give up false pride, and they use the same word, Abhiman, but it's false. But
yes.
If you have the real Abhiman. Abhiman is also kind of like position. Or
yes.
Abhiman means, Abhi means toward.
That's what I was thinking.
And Man means to me.
To me, toward me.
Toward me.
Toward me.
So that has that cuts both ways.
Yes.
It can either be a spirit like the word Krodha.
Yes.
And so many of these words can cut two ways, where it can either be an asset or a defect. And in most cases, the defect or asset are only shown over a period of time. Like what you described, maybe anukul for someone at one point and pratikul at another point.
Yes.
It takes time to know whether these emotions are going to play out in the favor of bhakti or go against bhakti. And it may be true at one time and not at another.
That's therefore, also very profound.
Anukul
yes.
and pratikul are always our criteria.
That's very nice. So is it favorable for my service to Krishna or not? Yes, and it's also, thank you so much, that sometimes that emotion may be favorable in one circumstance and unfavorable in another. Yes. And we see this with, you know, with the great devotees, that they exhibit opposite emotions at different times depending on what's nourishing the pastimes. Now, of course, Krishna's examples of his detachment, his renunciation, the primary one is leaving the rust nets. That he just walks away from the rust nets. Then he left Vrindavan. I hate even talking about that, it really bugs me. I don't like the words coming out of my mouth. You know, that Krishna left Vrindavan. I was just reading today in Chaitanya Charitamrita with Mahaprabhu's dancing in Rath Yatra, and how he's Swami Damodara is saying these verses of Radha and Krishna speaking to each other. You know, Radharani wanting Krishna to come back to Vrindavan. How can you be happy in Mathura? You know, that's not your real place of pleasure. And that Krishna left Vrindavan, of course, for so many reasons. Again, we could talk about that for at least a few years. Another one that really bothers me is Ram renouncing Sita. It's really hard for me to talk about these. You know, I'm just not going to talk about that anymore. And that really bothers me. If I ever meet Ramchandra, I'm going to talk to him about that one. And then we have a discussion on that.
I made a sadhu cry over that. I was also having a problem.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know. I actually, it happens in the seventh book, where some people say the style of the Sanskrit changes. And
that's their way of dealing with it, right?
Somebody else wrote that. We've had enough. And then, so I was questioning the validity of it, but it's in ninth canon, you can't get away from it. So I had some Sanskritist sadhu, Rambhakta.
Uh-huh.
And I, through a translator, I asked him about it. And he actually got emotional, and he said it was the hardest thing that Ram didn't know he loved.
Yes.
And actually, uh-huh. You know who got me over the hump?
Who's
his name Dharma, Krishna Dharma's Ramayana.
Oh.
The way he deals with it, you have to read that. It made me emotional. It was just, and Sita did not blame Ram.
Yes, she didn't, did she?
And it's just the Leela. And it's just, it's way over the top. It's, nobody talks about it that's a Rambhakta. Nobody.
Yes, yes.
So it's just it's one of those things, and it's just happened.
I met one devotee in Slovakia, and he said the way he deals with it is he remembers whenever he chants Hare Rama, Hare Rama, he's bringing them back together. So at least they're back together dancing on my tongue, yeah?
Bhakti Vidyananda Swami says, I just came to one conclusion that Lord Ramachandra is showing for us that just following the rules can bring us to disaster.
To disaster, yes, because Ram is so fixed on Dharma that Sita had gone through due process and proved her innocence, and just on the basis of a rumor, he banished her because he put the credibility of the rulership
as higher. Complicated.
It's very, 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 very complicated.
It's a little complicated, and I also was a washerman of all people.
But if we think about today's ruling politicians, they won't sacrifice anything, even if they've actually done something heinous. What to speak of a rumor? And for him, it was like, my responsibility is to the citizens. If there's even a rumor of impropriety, then I have to sacrifice my own happiness and the happiness of my family for the sake of this having a spotless character.
Such a difference.
Such a complete difference. But that was such a renunciation. I'm going to start crying, so I'm going to go on. Here. So as Lord Chaitanya, of course, who took sannyas at a very young age, leaving his wife and his mother. Another thing with Ram was happily accepting exile. So when Kaikeyi, absolutely unfairly and cruelly, asked for his banishment for 14 years, he said yes.
It's all on Mantara. She had a beautiful heart. She loved Ram like her only son. The thing that turned...
We're going to have to ask you to speak on Ram Leela sometime.
Yeah, the only thing that turned...
I can see that.
She had a hunchback maidservant said, she told her all these arguments, Ram's going to have a problem with Bharat, he's going to send him away, or worse, he's going to have a problem. And he was away visiting relatives, and it's a whole thing where she's got the... She was the original conspiracy theorist. But what broke Kaikeyi was, you know what? If Ram is crown prince, regent, that makes you...
The servant.
The maid servant of Kaishalya. You're no longer...
The
number
favorite.
One, wife number one. Mm-hmm. And Kaikeyi couldn't digest that, and she says, what do I do?
Yes.
Because she did herself like that. She wasn't primary wife, but she was just youngest in a
round. She's youngest and the most beautiful of the queens. She was number one.
Yes. She did herself, and she was afraid that she get back like that. Also.
Right.
Yes, that's also a very good point. But anyway, Ram was so renounced that he just accepted. He said, to keep my father's word on the, you know, the statement of my mother, yes, I will accept exile. I'll happily accept exile. That's his renunciation. And I also thought it was interesting how Krishna gives the Shaimantaka jewel back to Satrajit.
Right.
And also how he gives the Shaimantaka jewel back to Akura. He says, you keep it. You know, he's also very renounced. How it was interesting, it's mentioned how he gave Jarasandha's kingdom to Jarasandha's son, Sahadev. He didn't take the kingdom for himself. So we're going to go on to Aishwarya. So Aishwarya, Prabhupada often translates just as wealth, but it comes from the word Ishwara. And it means not just cash, but it means leadership of power. So Sri is leadership of charisma, and Aishwarya is a leadership of power. So where you actually have some control over everyone and everything. And that is, of course, a great opulence. When you have many, many people who will do your bidding because you have power. And of course, Krishna owns everything, and he controls everything. Of course, I like it when he tells Rukmini that he's penniless, and she said, well, you can say you don't own everything because you are everything. And of course, we see this... Huh? Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
Right? The whole opulence of Vaikuntha, of course. And the amount of charity that was given away was like 13,000... cows given to so many brahmanas every day in Dwarka. How he shows that he takes everything from Bali Maharaj, where he shows his brahmana that he actually is the whole universe. Everything is within him. I also like with the story of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that when he was very young, he asked his mother, he said, please give me a garland to worship the Ganga. And she says, in a minute. And then like many young children, he threw a temper tantrum. And in doing that, he destroyed the whole house. And then he lay down and went to sleep. And when he woke up, Sachi said, look, this is your house. Which is a nice example when Krishna seemingly destroys everything that we have. She said, it's your house. If you want to destroy it, you can. But how will I cook for you? And said that Mahaprabhu was a little embarrassed. And he said, well, I'll take care of this. And he went out and came back with some gold. Which I also think was interesting. He didn't just like mystically restore everything. He came out with some gold, and she asked all of her friends, where did Nima get the gold? Nima get the gold. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Krishna with Aishwarya, with his wealth and controlling power?
He owns everything.
So
what is... But he's not tooting his horn.
Yes.
He shares with everybody.
He does share with everybody.
His choice of sharing it always seemed to be a little unpredictable.
Ah, that's true.
You know, a lady gives them a couple of fruits, and then it's like a whole basket
of jewels, right?
You know, Sudama. You know, that's sort of showing off to your friend. But this, you know, he's unpredictable about his generosity.
Yes.
Lord Shiva's predictable.
Uh huh. Yes, Krishna is unpredictable. and who he shares wealth with, how he shares it, what moves him. That's one of the liberations, is you have equal opulence with the Lord. You have equal wealth with the Lord. So it's almost 6:30. I was going to talk about these in relation to ourselves. Should I still do that?
Well, I do have one question about these opulences. Are all of Krishna's opulences, his qualities, subsumed within these six? Or because he's unlimited, it's way, way beyond?
It must be beyond, because he has unlimited opulences. Rupa Goswami lists 64, and I've never done the exercise of taking the 64 and seeing if they all fit under these. That would be an interesting exercise to do.
Aishwarya Purna means that these six qualities are full in and of themselves and include all other qualities.
Well, there we go. So there's your answer.
Say that again?
He said that Aishwarya Purna means that these six include all the other 64. So maybe we could do that as a home fun assignment. Take the 64 qualities and see where they fit into these. And of course, Rupa Goswami says he is unlimited. Should we look at these briefly in regard to our own nature?
Yes.
Okay, so just very briefly, and then we'll have another kirtan. So one of the things that we're looking at in our book about spiritualizing career is matching your nature to your income stream. And often, are you leaving already?
No, actually, I just had to move my car.
Okay, so we do get to feed you, right? Okay.
Yeah,
so, you know, and often we think about our nature just in regard to the six field, to the four fields of work, the field of ideas, the field of government, the field of resources, the field of artistry. But we can also understand, there's other ways to understand our nature in regards to work, and because these are six ways of being prosperous, they can give us some idea about what do we like to enjoy, and what should we therefore do for our livelihood. So if we go back to the first one, beauty. So again, do we want to have a livelihood that involves beauty? Creating beauty for others. Having beauty as part of what we're producing. And again, this involves charismatic leadership and splendor. It involves, of course, dealing with all of the arts and all of the crafts. There's the field of artistry, which of course produces all the beauty and function for human society. But is something about beauty and splendor and art of maybe nature, of paintings, of music, of furniture, is that important to us? I remember once visiting one sannyasi. This was in Vrindavan, and he had this very small room where the bottom half of the wall was a different color. It looked like somebody tried to paint the walls and kind of stopped in the middle. And it was actually quite disturbing. And I said, Maharaj, how long have you lived here? He said, 8 years. And I said, why don't you paint the walls? And he said, well, I'm just here for a short time. And I wouldn't have been able to tolerate that. I mean, I just would have been like, you've got to fix the walls. So some of us really have very little interest in this. I mean, I've met people that it's not very important to them. But for others of us, this particular opulence is quite important. All right, if we go on to the one of virya. So this would be people who work, well, anyone in the field of resources is creating virya for the whole society. So anyone who's producing food, who's producing cloth, who's producing medicines, anyone who's in the working to produce resources for society, is the main way that virya is produced. Like in the field of artistry is the main place that Shri is produced, and in the field of resources is the main place that virya is produced for the society. But if we're particularly interested in health, you know, our own health, giving health to others, and some sort of strength and vitality, then we want, I mean, everybody wants all of these things, but if that's something that's very important, some people, it's not very important to them. You know, yeah, they want to be healthy and they want to be healthy, but it's not like the main driving thing in their life. All right, then we have gyan. So again, this is another way of being prosperous, knowing things, maybe knowing things in one area or in many areas. We have people who are innately very, very curious. I was talking to my grandson Chakra about his career, and I was saying, you know, from the time you were very little, you were always insatiably curious. And not all children are like that. You know, and there's a lot of people, bless you, there's a lot of people who aren't like that. A lot of people, well, you know, I know a little bit about this, a little bit about that, and that's fine. I know how to do my work, and that's okay. You know, but then there are other people who have their whole, the whole decor in their house is books. Right? They could live in a, they practically live in a library. Right? And when they go on the internet, they're not just trying to find out about the latest movie star, but they're looking out, you know, what's the latest theory about the origin of the universe, and, you know, constantly wanting to gain knowledge and to spread knowledge. And then there's yasha, which again, yasha means fame that you get from doing a good thing. And it involves community and family. So people who really, their work involves community. They want to be, they want to do good work and have a, these are the networkers. If you can think of the people who know hundreds or thousands of people and they network them. There was an experiment done once where a group of random people on the West Coast were given letters that they had to all get to a particular address on the East Coast, but it had to get there by sending to someone that they knew. So you had to send the letters, and that person had to send to someone they knew, that person. And thousands of people were given these letters. Some large percentage of these letters ended up going through one particular individual. So this one particular individual was so networked that giving these letters to thousands of people, I think it was something like 60, 70% of the letters, ended up going through his address. So there are people like that. That's their way of being prosperous. You know, these are the people that you ask, like the people with gyan. There are some people I call cosmic librarians. You know, if you want to know on about a subject, you know, I ask that person, they'll know. Right? Maybe in different subject areas. Okay, if I want to know where to find this Acharya commentary, I ask this person. If I want to know this science question, I ask this person. Then there's people, if I want to find a person, you know, I want, do you know of any person who does this? If they don't know, they'll know someone who knows who knows who knows who knows. So these are the community people, the network people. These are the people who want to build communities. Right? And having community is very important. And then vairagya. So this is when freedom and simplicity are very important to us. When less is more. You know, when we really enjoy cleaning out our closets and cleaning out our garage, you know, and having just what I need to get by. I have some devotee friends who are traveling musicians who write music about philosophy. So that's Sri, Jnana, and Vairagya. They have the beauty of their music, and they're also dancers. They have this whole display. Their music is all philosophy, so it's all Jnana. And they live on the road in a camper, Vairagya. You know, they're not interested in having a lot of things in this world. And for a lot of people, freedom in their career is a very high priority. They want to be able to do what they want, when they want, how they want. Simplicity. And then there's Aishwarya. So Aishwarya, again, deals with Ishvara. So these are the people who want, they want to run some organization where there's a lot of people under them and they accomplish things through that leadership of not just charisma, but of power. You know, they're directors and the leaders and the movers and shakers of the world. And we might associate that with something negative, but we certainly need Aishwarya in the society. We need people who want that prosperity of Aishwarya. So one of the ways that we can look at our nature is which of these ways of being prosperous make us personally feel rich. You know, some of them are going to be more than others. Some of them are going to be, you know, if I don't have that, I'm poor. Right? And others are going to be, well, I can have it or not have it. It's nice, but it's not the thing for me. It's not what's going to tell me that I have a life of prosperity. So these opulences are ways of understanding our nature. Also, these opulences are ways of understanding charity. So when we give in charity, we should give in charity of the opulences that we enjoy. So charity isn't just cash. If I enjoy wisdom, I should give wisdom. If I enjoy leadership, then I should empower others to be leaders. I should make others feel smart and others feel powerful. Right? If I enjoy community, I should help people to build community. If I enjoy beauty, I should give beauty to others. Now, ultimately with these six opulences, our key is that we should enjoy them and give them in charity as part of the internal spiritual energy and not the external. Because all of these are originally part of Lakshmi Devi and Srimati Bhagavati. And we should be diving prakriti mashritaha. We should be under the shelter of the internal energy and relish them as part of our seva and giving charity as part of our seva. Otherwise, if we try to enjoy them independently, we come under durga. And then we have this problem you mentioned with the beautiful woman, where these opulences become troublesome for us. You know, we think they're going to be a source of enjoyment, but actually they become a source of trouble. So thank you for letting me speak about the six qualities, and but in relation to Krishna, in relationship to our nature, I think with each of these, we just barely touched where we could go with them. And in one sense, I feel very embarrassed to be speaking in this highly learned assembly where, you know, so many of you have so much more to contribute that I have. I, so many times during this discussion, I thought, I'm supposed to be sitting in the audience and you guys should be sitting up here. But I want to thank you very, very much for for welcoming me here and giving me the opportunity. Thank you so much. And for having one of the nicest communities of Vaishnavas on the planet.
I agree.
I mean, anywhere I go, and I'm going to be very honest, I didn't appreciate this when I first came here. It took me a while. I had to get over some of my sectarian fanaticism. But, you know, what I tell people is that here on the Big Island, there's people from all different Gaudiya groups, and there's not politics, and there's not criticism, and there's just very well in the material world. I mean,
they don't get it.
There's some.
I think you're watering down or something.
There's some. Okay, Krishna says, where there's fire, there's going to be some smoke. There's some. But it's practically speaking non-existent.
Right.
Yeah. It's practically non-existent. And it's really nice. And there are some of the most wonderful Vaishnavas. And I really do travel all around the world, like literally. I really do see many, many, many Vaishnav communities that each have their different views. But the cooperation and the love here and the respect here is pretty unparalleled. I just haven't run into it. I've run into things that are close. New Govardhan, Australia is pretty close. But I haven't run into it to this extent that I've run into here. And it's something that has been very humbling for me, the Dagmar.
Can I contribute something to
that? Yeah, sure.
How I think that happened.